Okay. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell me your name, where you're from, and when you were born.
Okay. Name's Ashley Walmsley. I was born April 13th, 1983. I'm originally from Gallipolis, Ohio, which is right across the river from Point Pleasant. But I've been a resident in Point Pleasant probably for the last 15, 16 years.
I'm also April 83.
Are you?
Yep.
What day?
26th.
Ah,
yeah.
Not very far apart.
No. So why don't you tell me the Mothman story in your own words and how your family relates to it?
Well, basically, as far as the story goes, back in November of 1966, two young couples, the Scarberries and the Mallets, were up in the TNT area, which was often a place for teenagers to go and hang out and drag race and things. When they ran across a creature, which they originally thought was a man standing in the road, and it ended up being a out-of-this-world type figure with wings about 6-7 feet tall with red eyes, and ended up chasing them, flying over top of their car out to the outskirts back into town. And here we are over 50 years later, and we have the legend of the Mothman. How that relates to my family is my dad actually grew up next to the eyewitnesses. So there's 30th Street here in Point Pleasant. If you ever come to Point Pleasant, there's Village Pizza, and that road right there is 30th Street. And my grandma still this day has the same house, lives there. And just a few doors down is where the Scarberries lived. So Linda Scarberry, who's basically the main eyewitness, years ago, dad approached her and said, you know, what do you think about finally telling your story? And because he used to be their paper boy when he was little, she had remembered him and trusted him and thought he would do a good job because, you know, these people faced a lot of ridicule. Sometimes, you know, a lot of the eyewitnesses, including the Mallets, who were their friends who were in the car with them that night, still to this day will not speak of it at all. Dad's tried many times to get interviews. He's tried offering money. He'd do anything he could to get them to talk. And they still refuse. They won't talk about it. But Linda, I think, probably wanted maybe some peace of mind. Finally put out her story to say, you know, what we experienced was real. We're not crazy. We're not on drugs and this kind of thing. Because that's what a lot of people would say, even still today. And that's basically how my family got into it. And then years later, we have the Mothman Festival came first. And after the Mothman Prophecies was filmed, they had all the props and stuff left over. And these two guys named Bernie and Butch, who owned a food land in Katanning, Pennsylvania, where the Mothman Prophecies was filmed, bought all the props. And they used to bring them down to the festival every year and set up like the first year or two of the festival's existence. And that was a part of the festival. And then instead of coming down every year, they donated those. So dad started setting them up, and then we have the Mothman Museum. That's how it was born.
And so after they came back and said they saw this creature, what happened in Point Pleasant, and how did it go from that to becoming, you know, something that got turned into a Hollywood film that you know about?
Well, after that, a man by the name of John Keel, who was a researcher and an author in New York City, started investigating paranormal activity, and it brought him to Point Pleasant. After the Mothman was seen, basically in that moment, the eyewitnesses, first place they went was to the sheriff's office, and they thought, no, this doesn't sound right, but we'll follow you anyways to see what's going on. So they went up, and even on the way, I remember them saying, like Linda and them, about seeing the creature on the way up and then pointing at it, trying to get them to look, but they never saw it. So they've seen it multiple occasions. But, yeah, it was like mass hysteria, basically. You know, people would – and I say that – I use that term loosely. It's not like – you had people that were scared, and then you had people that were wanting to go up and hunt it. And that became the thing to do, is to go to the TNT area. And I think dad, even when he was little, his dad would take him up there. And there'd be people everywhere. And that place is pretty desolate. It used to be a World War II manufacturing ammunitions depot. And then after the war, it was only open for 3 years. And after that, they shut it down and then cleaned it back up, turned it into a wildlife refuge. But, you know, it's like, it looks like you're in the middle of nowhere when you're out there. And so, you know, after the Mothman stuff happened, that was the thing. People would go up and try to hunt Mothman and that. And then, you know, John Keel comes into the picture. He's investigating it, coming to Point Pleasant and staying. He became really close friends with Linda Scarberry and also Mary Heyer, who was the local reporter for the Athens Messenger. And so they have, there's a lot of letters and stuff in the Mothman Museum, like back and forth, conversing back and forth about what was going on and how they're doing and things like that. So, you know, here we are all these years later. It took a long time for, and it still is a process to get the locals to kind of grasp onto it. Most of them will tell you that they were on drugs. We went to school with them. They were on drugs, all this. And my response to that is they were not. They were not. And the reason why I say that is if you come to Point Pleasant, a lot of people fall in love with this town because we're kind of like a Mayberry. We're like 20 years behind time. So in the 60s, when the stuff, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll stuff was going on, it was more like the 40s. So they didn't have the disposable income to be doing these drugs and, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like a psychedelic experience. This is something they really experienced, and more than once. And you don't go to the emergency room, be treated for shock, and your life be changed and never want to talk about it, you know, based on that. These people had a real experience.
What are the stories that you heard growing up, like in your family and just going to school?
Well, to be honest, there for a long time, it was kind of a lull. Like, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you didn't really hear a lot about Mothman that I remember. Or maybe I was just too busy doing kid stuff. I don't know. But what I do remember about that time is that there was a lot of, like, ritualistic activity that would go on up in the TNT area. I remember my aunt, who graduated in 88, saying, you know, they used to sneak out of the house at night and go up there. And inside of the igloos, which were these ammunition bunkers, basically, they used to store that stuff, which are still standing. There's a few you can get in that's open to the public. But there's about 100 total out there that are privately leased and closed off, so you can't get into those. But the ones who were open, she said that they would go in and said that there was a table with a burnt outline of a cat where they've done, like, animal sacrifices and all these symbols on the walls and things like that. And that's what I kind of grew up knowing was that. It wasn't so much the Mothman. And then later on, the Mothman prophecies came out. I can't remember if Dad did his book first, because he's got two of the Mothman books that he did where he interviewed the eyewitnesses. Yes, they were out first. And then the Mothman prophecies came. From that point on, it started changing. But it's been a slow process getting the locals on board. Like, the people of the generation that are still around that were here when that stuff was going on, they're slowly coming to terms with realizing that it is good for the town. We're reversing the curse, so to speak, you know. So it's good for the town. It brings people literally from all over the world. And it's the younger generations, like the millennials and all of them, that are really into it, which is cool, which I'm really happy about. So it's been hit and miss throughout the years, but right now it's a major hit, which is good, and that's why we're here today doing this.
Yeah, it sounds like it was back when we were kids, you know, there was, like, the satanic panic stuff going on, mm-hmm. So it sounds like that's what it was.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So how do you think it got, you know, popular again, especially with millennials and, you know, all the memes and...
Yeah, memes, oh, yes. I don't know. I think it's just a culmination of events, of media. It's just like something reignited. You know, the Mothman prophecies hasn't been out for years. You know, it was like, what, 15 years or more? Came out right after I graduated high school, I think 2002, mm-hmm. And I was 01. So it's been a long time. And somehow he's just kind of stuck. And I don't know what really... I'd like to think that, like, the Mothman Museum, the Mothman Festival have a little to do with that, you know, because it's so popular and well-known. But I don't know. It's just, like, people, like, fell in love with Mothman, and, like, now he's their boyfriend, and you see that stuff on everything and the memes, and, you know, you'll see, and then all of a sudden Chicago's reporting all these sightings, and I don't know. It's like he's, like, back, you know, so, and people have this Mothman love, so I don't really know what caused it. It just kind of happened, mm-hmm. you know. It's kind of like when things come back in style again, so right. He's back in style.
What do you make of the whole Chicago sighting stuff?
I don't know, to be honest. I've talked to people that kind of know the person who seen it, and they think that he was on something, which I say that that's irony compared to what that, you know, that they used to say about the Scarberries and the Mallets and stuff, but it's a little different nowadays. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm not one to say that somebody, you know, if somebody has an experience, they have an experience. You can't take that away from somebody. You know, that's not my place. And I'm not saying that this didn't happen. It's just the way social media and stuff is today, and everybody want attention so bad, and people coming so forward about it. You know, we are usually hesitant to take that as gospel, per se. It's usually the people who don't want to talk about it, who've been completely shaken. Those are the people that typically have the story, and those are still kind of hard to find today. So, I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. There's probably definitely something to it. But it's just the saturation of, like, media, and it's just, you never know what to believe, you know, so.
What are some specific local reactions to the museum and the festival?
Well, usually as far as the festival goes, locals will complain about the traffic. And, you know, it's funny because since the bridge, the Silver Bridge that collapsed in 1967, that's, you know, well, ironically, there's a little tidbit, 13 months exactly to the day from the first sighting. And it was the 13th I-bar that caused it to collapse. So it's kind of weird. But, you know, ever since then, you know, Point Pleasant doesn't boom economically like it used to. You know, we've had the bypass out here, and a lot of people just kind of go past it. And if it wasn't for the Mothman Festival and the Mothman Museum and all the media coverage it's had, you know, I think people would just keep driving, you know. So, you know, as far as the museum goes, we don't have a whole lot of locals in. It's kind of starting to pick up a little bit more. It's more so like you bring family or visiting from out of town, and they bring them in, are like, hey, this is the place everybody goes. It's one of those kind of things. So, but everybody else loves it. Now, business owners love it, you know, because it brings so many people to town and brings people through the doors that normally wouldn't be here. And the tourism is good for that. But if it wasn't here, you know, we'd probably be struggling. So
what are the major employers here?
Major employers are in the town itself. We have a hospital, Pleasant Valley Hospital, and schools, school systems. And then we have small businesses, have a lot of banks. we have a lot of those, not a whole lot of restaurants. The bigger employers are, like, across the river, like Appalachian Power, AEP, Kiger Creek, those power plants, coal power plants, basically, is what it is. So, and another hospital across in Galpolis, Holzer Hospital, is a big employer. And that's about the gist of it.
Do people still go to the TNT area, and what would I find if I went up there?
Yeah, they go all the time. Well, you would find on a normal day people hunting and fishing. They at one time had the record state bass in West Virginia. And there's, I think, now don't quote me on this, there might be 13 ponds, I think, that's up there. Ironically, 13. There may be more, but I just remember people talking about Pond 13 a lot. There is a farm museum. The West Virginia State Farm Museum is there, which is really cool. The Mason County Fairgrounds is in that area. But as far as the TNT part, the McLennic Wildlife Refuge, it's different trails and things. The igloos is what the Mothman fans like to go to. And we call those igloos because they look like the shape of an igloo. It's basically just a storage bunker.
Some of them are still in use?
Yes. They are. They're privately leased from different companies. I think AEP across the river leases some. Several years ago, probably 7 years ago or so, somebody was leasing one out and illegally storing explosives that they shouldn't have been. And it was like a really hot day in like July or something, and it exploded. And you could see like the flames flying up in the air from like a mile away. And the ATF came in and shut the area down.
What's the ATF?
The Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. So the government basically came in and shut the area down for months. And months, and it was a no-fly zone for months because they didn't, I don't know why, but, there's a airport right next to it, just a small local airport. But they were investigating, and I guess they found out the guy was harboring illegal explosives. And the way those things are made are that, and it did its job, is that the concrete walls are, like, so thick that if one would explode, it wouldn't create a chain reaction because they're all next to each other, and they're in a line, and they're across from each other. It's just row after row, but you wouldn't know it because it's so covered, like, with brush and stuff. Huh. And this one, you can walk to it, and it the top is completely exploded off of it, and it looks like something you'd see in, like, a zoo, like an animal sanctuary thing. You have, like, tigers and stuff walking around inside, you know. It's got this weird vibe to it. And, but yeah, you would find the igloos, and, there's also some remnants left over from the manufacturing over behind the farm museum, is the viaducts. And if you go to the Mothman Festival and you do the hayride, we have a hayride up there every year in the evening. It takes you right beside of those. And they're basically these tall stone structures, and people like used to joke and call it Stonehenge because that's kind of what it looks like. To give you a visual. And basically they used to pull train cars underneath and dump in all these hazardous toxic chemicals into it. And so those are still standing. Yeah. So there's a little bit of everything. It's kind of like our own little Area 51, I guess you can say. And so people are curious and they like to go up there and check it out.
Mm-hmm. Do people worry about fishing in those ponds after having all the hazardous chemicals?
I would worry. I don't think anybody's eating the fish. I think they're just, catching the fish. I mean, I wouldn't even eat them out of the high river. You know, that's probably more, loaded with stuff than anything. But, years ago, just a few years ago, I knew that the EPA was still coming up and testing the soil for contaminants, and it was a, what do they call those? Where they come in and they basically rate the contamination. Disaster site is basically what it was. And they came in, after they shut down the manufacturing, they tried to clean it back up and shaved like 2 to 3 inches of topsoil off within like a 6-7 mile square radius trying to clean the stuff up. So, yeah. And I probably shouldn't out myself on this, but I'm big into metal detecting. And I did get permission, which is what you're supposed to do. So I went to the farm museum and I asked, do you care if I check some stuff out back here where the viaducts are? And they're like, sure, go ahead, So I did, and it was just going off left and right, like just everywhere. And you could literally roll back some of the soil like a piece of carpet, and there's just stuff all in, like lead and all kinds of things underneath of it. Yeah, needless to say, I never went back and did that again because I was thinking this is pretty toxic, I'm sure. Yeah. So, but yeah,
did you find anything of note?
Yeah, I did. I found a letter J, which is actually on display in the Mothman Museum. And they had different, when they were in there setting the place up, if you go back and look, on some of the records, like the pictures and stuff that they have when they were building the ammunition depot and all of that, they would take a picture and say area letter J, area letter M, area letter this. I'm hoping that that's what that J is from, but it's pretty cool. So yeah, I'm sure I'd find a lot more if I kept looking, but I'm not going to do it.
So tell me about how you worked with the guys from Bethesda and how that came about.
Basically, one of the developers was wearing, he must have came to the Mothman Museum at some point because he was wearing one of our shirts. And when they were coming out with all the media stuff about the game getting ready to release, he was wearing it and I seen it. And I was like, Dad, you should totally try to contact them and see if we can get them to come to the festival, because they're just in Maryland, which isn't far away. And so he did, and just a shot in the dark, the guy answered us back, and he's like, hey, you know, I can't come, but I can get you in contact with some of these, you know, the marketing people, and maybe they can work with you. And so that's basically what happened. I ended up talking to a really nice girl, and she said, we'd love to be a part of the festival. And this was before the game was released. So they came, and they showed up, and they gave out a bunch of free stuff, and it was, people came from all over to see those guys, so it was really cool. So, I mean, it was just a lucky coincidence, basically. So
you had no idea it was going to be in the game before that?
Had no clue, no. But that was our hint, that he was wearing a Mothman shirt. That's why everybody suspected that it was going to be a part of it. So, just really good luck on that.
And have you played the game?
I have not. I'm not a gamer, but I have watched videos and stuff on it. Since I handle the marketing and stuff for the Mothman Museum and the festival, I kind of had to know a little bit about it. So I at least watched, like, when they were doing, like, I don't know, is it called beta testing or something like that, where they go in and they give so many people access to the game to play it, right, to see what they think. There was videos released for that, and I was watching it. And I knew that Mothman was going to be in it, and also the Flatwoods Monster was going to make an appearance, which I thought was cool. And that West Virginia, my biggest thing was, is that West Virginia and Appalachia was represented, which I thought was really nice. So,
what do you think about how it's portrayed in the game, Point Pleasant and the museum? And
I thought it was pretty cool, to be honest. One of the things that I thought was the coolest was you went in, one of the videos a guy was playing, he goes into an apartment or something, and there's a letter on it, and it has said, hey, Jeff, something about losing the keys or something, here you go. And, like, I left you a poster or something like that. And I just wonder if it wasn't a nod to Dad, because, I don't know, I just thought that was, his name's Jeff, yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. The museum looked really neat. You know, we joke around about there being a cult church in the basement of the museum, like there was on the game where you worship Mothman. There's not a basement in the museum. Yeah, on the game. Yeah, you go into the basement and like it's like looks like a place of worship for the Mothman, and there's like these candles lit and stuff like that. And then I know that you can go down to the riverfront here on the game, and there's like the Mothman eggs or whatever laying around. You can see the statue, which is by the museum, which is really cool. So somebody's done the research, you know, and I just thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. So
it is one of the most identifiable things on the map.
Yeah, and the TNT area, I'm pretty sure it's in it too. But yes, yeah, that's brought a lot of people to town too, even still. Like, they still show up, come to the museum. Like, I think last week a guy came in, like, his Fallout gear, you know, and, you know, so we have fans from all over. And so, and Bethesda, what was cool about them too is that they've been really generous, like with the Mothman posters. They designed that with the Mothman Museum, which was really cool. And they also gave us, like, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 of those Vault Boy masks just to give to people. So we've been giving those out to, like, the kids who come in and stuff. So, yeah, it's been really cool.
What can you tell me about, you know, people who come to the museum from different places? How do they know the story? And then I'll ask specifically about people who are doing, like, Fallout tours.
Yeah. There's been a lot of, like, media coverage, a lot of TV shows, have came throughout the years. For example, like, years ago, probably, I'd say 15, 20 years ago, Dad was on Unsolved Mysteries, you know, talking about the Mothman, and Robert Stack messed up and called it Point Pleasant, Virginia, instead of West Virginia, so we still laugh about that. People still get that confused for some reason. Annoying. Yeah. And then, you know, and there's been, like, we've had the Travel Channel several times, Discovery, which they're all in together. We've had, Monster Quest. We've had, just like different film crews, Small Town Monsters, which is one of my favorites. We've became friends. Those guys have come and done, you know, documentaries, and they're still working on them. And there's just been a lot of news and media coverage, and I think that's really what has grown. It's like a snowball effect over the years. And then, of course, the Fallout game came, and even before so, the hype about it, I think, is what drove a lot of people here. But they literally come from all over the world. And one year we had the Mountain Monster guys from the TV show Mountain Monsters. They did a meet and greet for free during the festival. We had a guy bring his son. They were from Australia, and that's what he wanted for his birthday, was to meet them. And, like, literally they come from all over. Yeah. So.
And with people doing Fallout tours, do you know where else they go?
Usually to the TNT area, Point Pleasant. They go to the Flatwoods, hit those places up. But those are the ones that I know specifically.
Why don't you tell me about what's in the museum?
Basically, like I'd said, we have the movie props from the Mothman Prophecies. One of my favorite things are the handwritten police depositions from the eyewitnesses, the Mallets and the Scarberries. This is something that Dad included in his book, the Facts Behind the Legend, the Mothman Facts Behind the Legend book, and then the Behind the Red Eyes book that he did. When he was doing his interview with Linda, she had given him these papers, basically. And it was, imagine after you've seen this creature, you go to the police. They separate them out into different rooms to make sure they're not lying. And they give them a pen and paper and say, here, write down your story. And so the original depositions are in there on display. Handwritten, it's depicting what it is, and if you read all of them, there are very few discrepancies between them all. And so we have those. We have a lot of newspaper clippings, press clippings. Ironically, my grandpa, my dad's dad, had saved a lot of these press clippings from when the bridge had collapsed, and even like Mothman stuff. And my grandma gave it to him several years ago, like when he was going to open up the museum, and that's how those came in there. And then there's, like, you know, folk art and things like that, just different pieces of interest that we have on display. That's basically the culmination of things that make up the Mothman Museum.
With the folk art, are those things people donate, or do you collect them?
Both. It's a lot of donations. Some of the things, like, in the earlier days, it was collecting. It was trying to find different pieces to put together. Now people just, like, donate, and they're like, here, take this, put it on display, you know. So that's basically how that's came about.
Do you have plans for the future of the festival and the museum?
There's always plans, but the problem is that we're so busy with it, sometimes it's hard to think that much into the future. We're like a few months into the future. So when it comes to the planning Mothman Festival, because it's such a big undertaking and we have so many people come, you know, we have maybe our core group that works on it is like me, Mom, and Dad. Wow. And a few others. And so we're literally planning a party for like 10,000 people, and there's three of us. And then when it comes down to the actual festival, like a couple weeks before, then it's more like, and most of it's family, you know. My cousin does the bus tours to the TNT area. That used to be my job, and so now she does it. My aunt helps make sure all the tours are organized. My grandma's work in the museum helping, you know. So it's literally a family effort. It's a lot of undertaking. As far as future plans, we're just hoping to grow, you know, keep growing. We did just add another room. We expanded the back part of the museum. There was another building that's owned by the landowner, the caretaker, and she allowed us to expand into it. So we have added that on, too. And then the museum the festival has shifted on down farther down the road, because eventually, we're almost to a glass ceiling point when it comes to the festival itself. So, people were hoping we'll catch on and if they need to let people camp out in the front yard for like $50, do it. If you want to let people park in your yard for $10, do it. You know, there's opportunities here, and people would do it. You know what I'm saying? So there's only so much room we can grow before you go into the river, you know? Right,
right. And aside from the tours, what are the other things that happen
during the festival?
Yeah.
During the festival, there's guest speakers. We have different guest speakers on all different topics. A lot of them talk about Mothman, paranormal stuff, folklore stuff. We have live bands and entertainment. Tons of food vendors, which is my favorite. I'm a foodie. Of course, the Mothman statue is like the Mickey Mouse of Disneyland. That's everybody's wanting their picture with it. Mm-hmm. A lot of cool vendors, merchandise vendors. And we are very specific on what vendors we allow come in. Because, again, we only have so much room. And so it's not like your typical, like, paparazzi jewelry, you know, that kind of thing. It's more like artists, local artists, people who have something niche that is related directly to paranormal, Mothman, Men in Black, UFOs, that kind of thing, which is also really cool. Different activities for the kids. We always try to highlight all the local areas that you can go and visit, like Tewandowee Park, which is just right down the road. You know, different restaurants and things. Then we have the hayride at night on Saturday night. And we have usually some kind of years, you know, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we started seeing an influx of people come to town on Friday, since the event doesn't actually start until Saturday. And, you know, they were asking, you know, what can we do? You know, what's there to do? So I came up with the idea of doing a Kickstarter event, just to get people excited. And that's where, like, the Small Town Monsters guys came in, and they started showing their films down at, we have a historic state theater that sits vacant 364 days out of the year. Oh, wow. It's only used, well, 363 days, I should say. It's only used like, you know, 2 days, and that's for Mothman Festival. Oh. So we open it up, and, you know, a lot, you know, they use this, you know, project on the screen and stuff, their films, and that's been a big hit. So there's a little bit of everything, and it continues to grow. Last year we had Dan Bell visit, who's a big YouTuber, and so I've been trying to kind of segue into that, because what's nice about that is that our generation and younger are big into watching YouTube channels. Like, there's no days of cable are pretty much gone, and so the cord cutters, so to speak, are the ones who are attracted to that. So we had him and another guy goes by the name of Carpetbagger that came. And he's really cool, and he does a lot of, like, different, just, they go to odd attractions, and that's what their vlogs are about. And so we brought them in, and they did a meet and greet. And what's cool about that is it brought more vloggers. So they did all the advertising post-event for us, basically. So that was cool. It worked out well. So.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you would like to add?
Not really. I think we covered just about everything. But basically, if you want more information, you can go to mothmanmuseum.com, and there's mothmanfestival.com. If you see any funny, stupid memes on the Facebook pages, that's usually me posting it. Not the corny ones. That's my mom. Yeah, and the event page, as of right now, we are in March, the beginning of March, and right now it's showing that 18,000 people are interested in the Mothman Festival, and that's a record number for this early of interest. Wow. And we've already sold out of spaces for vendors, so that's going to be interesting. And we haven't even, like, found anybody yet, like, a big major attraction. I keep saying we need to get, like, Josh Gates or somebody like that to come, but I don't know. It may be nothing. It may just be that the lure of the Mothman is enough to get people to come here. Right. So, which is what I'm hoping. They can do all the work. We can take a break. Cool.
Well, thank you so much.
No problem.